Saturday View on Midlands 103. With thanks to Lumcline Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclineEnergy.com. Have your say. Call 0818 300 103. Text or WhatsApp your Saturday View to 083 3010 103.
And a very good morning to you all. Ronan Berry here on Saturday View. No, it's not Easter Saturday just yet, but there's a lot of talk about Easter. You nearly think it's Easter weekend. We only just had St. Patrick's weekend. God, the year is flying, isn't it? Flying past. But no, next weekend is another bank holiday weekend and you can break out those Easter eggs. Hopefully your Lenten fast is going well and you haven't broken too many times. Although that is one of the stated reasons behind Patrick's Day, isn't it? To allow us one little day's grace to go back and enjoy all the things we do. Anyway, enough of that. Let's see what's coming up for you this morning on Saturday View. We're going to talk about the first pig to human transplant. It was a kidney transplant that took place in the US last week or the week before, I think it was. It's the first of its kind globally. We're going to just talk to somebody from the Irish Kidney Association and see what are the implications like. Is that something that could be happening across the rest of the world very shortly? And would it go and help alleviate backlogs and waiting lists for people waiting on essential organs like that? I'm also going to talk about diversity in our local St. Patrick's Day parade. Certainly, I found in stuff I saw on social media, in parades I witnessed myself, there was an increased level of diversity in the floats and the people contributing brought a lot of colour and a lot of kind of celebration to the parades too. Did you notice that in your town, in your village? Let me know, 083 3010 103. What I really want to ask you about this morning though too is on social media, have you been hacked? Have you been had your account cloned at all in the past while? It just seems to be becoming an everyday thing at this point. You know, you get a friend request from somebody, maybe from a sister or a family member who you already know you're connected with maybe for the last number of years, but here's a new friend request. And maybe the picture looks, it's a picture of them, it's one of their pictures. There might be a little fancy frame or a banner around it and you're going to go, oh, so you probably don't accept that request, or do you? Because it could be somebody just duplicating an account intentionally. Maybe their account was hacked, so they're duplicated. Maybe it's somebody trying to clone it. And why would somebody want to do that? Well, it's not illegal, I think. So what can we do to kind of stop this happening? And what are the implications of an account being actually hacked? And what are the potential implications of it being cloned? And what are the subtle differences? That's one question I want to put out. So if you have been hacked or cloned in the last while, drop me a text on 083 3010 103 and let me know. But before all that, I'm going to touch on that big thing that happened this week on, you know, we were told on Tuesday was going to be, or on Thursday was going to be this major political earthquake. There was going to be an announcement made and it certainly deflected a lot of attention away from the release of the report on the assisted dying bill. And there was talks of like secondary reports and other reports from the chair of that group, and all seemed to kind of, for want of a better expression, die down when the news broke that Leo Varadkar would be stepping down as Taoiseach. It came as a huge shock to most people, even people in the media who, as you well know, often get the first line of sight on something like that and maybe get the story, or the story breaks 24, 48 hours before it actually happens, and that maybe compelled somebody to come forward a bit quicker and announce that resignation. But anyway, he told us this week that he's going to step down as Taoiseach. He's going to stay on as a TD for now, hasn't declared his intention to run again or to not run, unlike many of his party colleagues. And the headcount at the minute is 11 Fine Gael TDs who won't run in the next general election, which will happen any time between now and the next kind of 11 months, I think, is the max time the government can run. But if he was to not run again, that would be 12 Fine Gael TDs that wouldn't be rerunning. That is a third of their TDs that they have in the Dáil at present. So was that some of the reason behind his stepping down as leader? Was it the recent compelling defeat in the referendum? But what we do know is, and it's probably, I think nominations close tomorrow, is that Simon Harris is pretty much guaranteed to be our next Taoiseach. Now, I threw a question out to people there while I was talking to Aidan Barry about who would you choose if we had the choice to put somebody in as Taoiseach, who would you choose and why? And Mick in Portlaoise, or Mark in Laois, has texted me to say that he firmly believes to put our own Carol Nolan forward, that she would make an excellent Taoiseach. She has her finger on the pulse of the people and she speaks the mind of the people too. We need more TDs like her. She is one in a million. So thanks for your text, Mark. That's quite interesting, because if Carol runs again, which I'm assuming she will, she'll be running in Offaly this time, so she won't be representing Laois, which is quite interesting. So, but interesting. Thank you for putting that forward as well. Let me know who you think would be our next Taoiseach and why you think, if we had a one-off opportunity to do so. And as I said, maybe try and keep it clean at best. But yes, Simon looks like he is, without doubt, the united one. To find a little bit more about how Taoiseachs are elected and what the kind of and what we know about what's happened in the last couple of days, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Adrian Kavanagh. He's a political analyst and a lecturer of political geography at the University of Maynooth. He's a Portlaoise man. A very good morning, Adrian. Is there anything that can stop Simon Harris being our next Taoiseach at this stage?
Nothing really, unless there's a shock last-minute person coming forward to contest the Fine Gael leadership contest, which seems very unlikely at this stage. After that, then, if Fianna Fáil and the Greens don't want an election now, and I don't think anyone wants an election now, at least on the government benches, then he'll have the votes to win, the vote to become Taoiseach. And then he'll effectively be appointed after that. So I'd expect, it's very you never say never in Irish politics, but I think it's very unlikely that he won't be the next Taoiseach come probably a few days from now.
Yeah, it looks like there's kind of, it's gained huge momentum and it's going to move a lot quicker. And it's what kind of Leo Varadkar expressed in his, when he announced it on Thursday, that he wanted the kind of things to be resolved quickly. But what was really, I suppose, a standout thing was over the preceding day or two, all those other senior figures within the party pulled out of the race very, very quickly. I suppose that raises one question. Is there a potential poison chalice being passed over here? And if we think back to when Leash Offaly man Brian Cowan became Taoiseach, and you know, many people are aware of what happened both globally and nationally after that as well. Is there any sniff that there's something else at play here?
I don't. I'm sort of thinking probably not. I think everyone realises it's going to be a tough election contest, the next general election, which, let's not forget, is due to be held at some stage in the next 9 months, at this stage, 9 months. The leader of Fine Gael is going to face a tough contest in the next general election. I suspect the thinking of, say, the more senior members of the cabinet, people like Simon Coveney, Heather Humphreys, their thinking is probably like whoever wins this, whoever becomes Fine Gael leader, they probably have to elect someone who's going to be in for the long haul. Someone who will still be there, say, if things don't go well for Fine Gael in the next general election, who can lead the party from the opposition benches, and who's young enough to kind of build up the party over the next following 5 years, or maybe 10 years, because when Fine Gael go out of government, they usually are out of government for a long period, if history tells us anything.
Yeah, and actually one of their former members and very much involved in the media, Ivan Yates, has often said that any party, if they do 2 terms in government, they need a term out of it as well. It's kind of a natural thing. But I suppose Simon Harris is leading a party where 11 of his colleagues have already said over the past year they'll be rerunning. So he has a rebuild. And I think even that challenge is not just at national level. I think that's coming right back on the ground locally where there's a party.
I've been tracking the councillor nominations myself and councillor and there are a lot of Fine Gael councillors who won't be running this time. Now, in some cases, I suspect most of the councillors are running, have decided not to run. So at the moment, at least 36 of Fine Gael's councillors will be stepping down at the next local elections, which are, of course, on the 7th of June, which is roughly 15% of all the councillors that got elected for Fine Gael in 2019. Now, I don't think that some of that might be some of them looking ahead and saying, well, we're going to have a tough contest and maybe this is the time to step down. But there are a lot of very senior councillors in that list. There's a lot of very young Fine Gael councillors in that list. But the issues they've talked about are more about toxicity in politics and how tough it is to be a councillor, and the level of abuse they've been getting, particularly through social media, since they became councillors. And of course, there's family demands as well. Being a councillor is a very tough job. It's remunerated as a part-time job. So you have to do a full-time job to pay the bills. But there is this expectation on councillors that it's a 24/7 job all the same. So it's a very tough job. So I think that's part of the issue as well. At the moment, nearly 100 councillors, nearly 100 councillors who won seats the last time won't be running again in the next local elections. I suspect that number will be higher come June the 7th.
Yeah, and there's been so much talk, analysis on a potential change of government and a potential, you know, a huge change in the Dáil. Even if that's not directly voted for, it's coming anyway with the fact that there's different names, there'll be different people on the sheet as well, provided the main parties can find people to run for them in the first instance as well. Of course, one thing that's kind of raised its head the last couple of days, and even people are texting me in this morning as well going, well, we haven't voted for Simon Harris to be Taoiseach. And sometimes you think, is there a little bit of a misunderstanding out there that the people generally don't vote for a Taoiseach? It's always elected by the Dáil. And I suppose it's always been a he at this point, but they're always elected by the Dáil.
Yeah, if you think about it, like most of the people who have become Taoiseach in the history of the state, a lot of them actually became Taoiseach not at an election time, but in between election times. So even if you look at, say, Leo Varadkar became Taoiseach in 2017, a few years after that election, nearly all of, I think Micheál Martin and probably De Valera are the exceptions, but a lot of Fianna Fáil's Taoiseach became, took up the role usually in between election times. So Charlie Haughey, Jack Lynch, Albert Reynolds. So the norm is actually for people to be elected Taoiseach not immediately after an election, but usually in between election cycles when the leader of your party has decided for some reason or other to step down.
I suppose from a profile point of view, I guess one positive you can definitely throw at it is if we look at some other world leaders, Vladimir Zelensky in Ukraine is 45, Justin Trudeau in Canada, 51, Sanna Marin was 34 when she took office in Finland in 2015, up until last year when she left office. Simon Harris will be 37. He will be the youngest ever Taoiseach taking the mantle from Leo Varadkar, who was 38 when he took office in 2017. I suppose if we look west across the water, and we look at, you know, the two front runners for the American presidency at, I think it's 82 and 78. Surely it's probably not the worst thing maybe to have somebody that bit younger, and not trying to be ageist on this, but somebody who's younger, you know, has a family too, is living in that thing where, you know, he's trying to raise a family, balance all that work-life commitments. Do you think, will that endear him to voters, or is that kind of tsunami of change coming?
I think probably change is coming, but I think it's no harm that the Fine Gael had a change of leadership. Sometimes if things go well for you, if you change your leader, there's a honeymoon period where your party gets a bounce. So if things go well for Simon Harris over the next few weeks and months, like given the way things are going in the polls, given the level, the swing that we're going to expect to see heading towards Sinn Féin, and if you look at the next local elections, everyone forgets now probably, but the last local elections in 2019, which was, what was it, about 8-9 months before the general election, Sinn Féin had a terrible local elections. So Sinn Féin are going to find it very easy to pick up seats in these local elections. Even if they were standing still, they'd probably double their seat numbers. So it's going to be a tough ask, but maybe, and this could be some consolation, maybe the fact that if Simon Harris has the honeymoon period, there might be a few Fine Gael seats held in June that mightn't have otherwise been held. As for the European elections, personally, I don't really care too much about European elections. I always think they're a bit like a mini presidential election. They're more personality contests that really don't have that much of an impact on local and national policy. But he'll face problems with the European elections because the list of Fine Gael candidates, if I'm being honest, isn't as strong as they had in 2019. And to do well in local elections, it's all about candidate profile. It's all about how well the candidate is known. So there's a lot of big hitters who won seats for Fine Gael in 2019. Mairead McGuinness, Deirdre Clune, Frances Fitzgerald won't be running this time. And I think they could struggle in the European elections, no matter what happens in terms of Simon Harris's leadership. But personally, for me, the local elections is the more important contest.
Yeah, and to be one, it'll be one.
If they can win over 200 seats in the local elections, it would be down on 2019, but that would be a big achievement for him. And it also means, given the number of, as you mentioned already, given the number of TDs who are stepping down, you have now a big pool of potential replacements. And a big pool of potential replacements who will have had experience of winning an election literally a few months before the general election.
Absolutely. And of course, the last general election too, I mean, Sinn Féin in particular elected TDs that some of them were actually caught by surprise. Was one, I think, who spent about 3 weeks of the campaign on holidays and came back and almost to find they were elected as a TD. So sometimes experience, and you know, even with Simon Harris, there's often talk about, you know, people like Helen McEntee not going for leadership because she didn't have cabinet experience. You could see a huge amount of first-time TDs at the Dáil again this time around. But it's going to be interesting to watch. As Adrian, as always, thank you for coming on and giving your analysis.
No worries.
And undoubtedly, we'll be talking a lot in the coming months. That's Adrian Cavender. He's a lecturer of geography in the University of Maynooth. He's a political analyst too from Portlaoise. Thanks for all your texts as well. Interesting, when we mention politicians and toxicity, it happens for lots of people in the media, radio presenters as well. So thank you to the listener who sent in that beautiful text me there a while ago. Really appreciate it, and keep them coming there, you know. But thanks for listening. That's the main thing. Time for a quick break. After that, have you been hacked or cloned on social media?
Saturday View on Midlands 183 with thanks to Lumclean Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumcleanEnergy.com.
I'll get to some of your texts now in just a short while around who you think should become Taoiseach. If we were given that one-off opportunity to become Taoiseach, who would it be? Why would you make them Taoiseach? Let me know what you think. 083 3010 103. I put a question out earlier about, have you been hacked or had your Facebook or social media accounts cloned? Lots of people have texted in as well, saying a massive number of people who use social media are monumentally unaware of the risks associated with leaving their accounts open to all to view. They accept friends and follow requests from random people because they believe the more friends and followers they have equals some kind of clout. Some people post their whole lives online thinking that any negative impact only happens to other people. Thanks for that, Mark, as well. Other people texting in saying as well, you know, they're frequently seeing this on a daily basis of, you know, accounts being hacked as well, and nothing being done about it, apparently, if people try to raise that issue with the providers as well. Another texter has said that my Facebook account has been hacked weekly. I'm not technically minded, so I just carry on as normal. Reports it to Facebook, as many people do. You can click on that link, but otherwise continue on as you have been. So what are the implications, I suppose, and what are the difference between an account being actually hacked and account being cloned? Well, probably no better person versus in the Midlands to talk about social media than Conor Cochran. He's the founder of Social Media Elite, Icon Management and Cash Beauty in Mullingar. Very good morning, Conor.
Good morning, Ronan. How are you?
Brilliant. Conor, if you were to sum it up very quickly, there is a very subtle, or there is a big difference between an account being hacked and an account being cloned.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably that's where a lot of people get quite confused, Ronan. I suppose when you look at a cloned account or duplicate account, that necessarily does not mean you've been hacked. Whereas a hacked account means that your account is breached and someone has access to your account and you may no longer have access to it.
And that brings its own implications, because somebody just pointed this out to me the other day that if your account was hacked, and I think as some people do, they maybe just go and set up another account, you've left your account open, including, you know, all private messages you might have sent to people and all your personal detail. You're leaving that behind in somebody else's hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think one of the reasons how a lot of people get this even quite mixed up, Ron, is that people, when they get their account cloned, they often think that they have been hacked, and that actually isn't the case. So, for example, if you did have your social page on public viewing, that I could go on today, I could take all your pictures, I could go and create a new profile in 5 minutes with all your pictures, your exact same name, same links, everything in it, and then go through your friend list and start to add everyone on your friend list. Now, then all of a sudden, your friends are saying, you could have like a story up on Instagram or Facebook, for example, saying, sorry, my other page was hacked, please add this one. Everyone then starts accepting and adding that one, thinking that there has been a hack. And in that, then someone might be sending links to your friends, and that's then when someone else will get hacked, because there could be a link in it, or it could be, you know, oh, I can't access my phone, could you send me some money, I'm stuck, or something like that.
And who or what do we know are typically behind attempted hacks or indeed cloning? I mean, cloning, I suppose, with the example you've given, somebody could do it from just purely out of a malicious thing to try and duplicate somebody's account or try to just stir up a bit of you-know-what with somebody. But what, on a more sinister level, what is typically behind them? Do we know that kind of...
Yeah, like when they're cloning accounts, they're definitely looking to get to the next stage, which isn't necessarily to hack your account, but to hack friends of your account. True, because they'll be able to send links to your friends, and your friends will trust, think that it's actually coming from you. So you'll click on these links, you'll open the links, you might be requested, you know, as I said, for money or something like that. But these would be organized crimes. who would be running these sort of strategies online, and it'd be very simple process in theory of how they do it, and obviously a lot of people fall for it.
And I think as well, that's one thing. I think there was a time where people were quite aware of this, and they would be very vigilant and diligent if they saw somebody's, you know, a friend request coming in. But it seems to be happening so often now that people just ignore it. And I was kind of thinking, this is just people who see, oh, there's a friend request from somebody. I'm already friends with them. I'm not going to accept that. But actually what's also happening is somebody's account maybe has been hacked and they just recreate a new account, which is kind of staggering. But I suppose you can understand where they might be coming from. And I guess the question that comes from all that is, what can people be doing, number one, to be just on the watch out, and also to try and prevent it?
Yeah, no, it's a really good point, Ben. I think probably one of the first things I do is, I wouldn't have your page on public unless you have good reason to it. Obviously, we work with lots of online creators, and they have good reason to have their page on public, and how it's managed is very securely with different regulation in terms of how they manage it themselves. But for just a normal individual who hasn't got a large profile online, I don't see any reason why you'd have your page on public. I think having it on private, first of all, kind of protects your imagery, protects everything that's on it, and you have the control of who you let onto your page. The second thing is then when you're, for your own page, I would advise everyone to have two-factor authentication on all their social media pages. Same with their emails, because that's often how people get into their social pages, is via their emails. And that's very easy to add to anyone's phone. So if someone was to log in from a different place, you'd get a text message straight to your phone, is this you logging in? And then the final thing is that if you did have a message from a friend or something like that you wasn't too sure, I would take it off the platform and maybe message them on WhatsApp and say, I got this message from you, is this you or not? Like, and just clarify it there. Could be another way of just making sure before you start engaging, but only if it's abnormal, of course, or from a different page.
Because I see it myself there sometimes. I did have a profile on one of the social media platforms, and I had it set to public, and you would get likes and clicks or requests. And when you click on that, like, often it's stuff that children certainly shouldn't see. I myself don't want to see, but it's very explicit of its nature. And it's all these fake or, you know, bot accounts too. But that can all happen there maybe. And people may not even realize that. I noticed on social media recently, there was a whole load of like kind of message requests, and all of them were, geez, they were awful. Like, they were, geez, if my wife saw it, she'd probably run me out of the house. And I was kind of going, it's amazing to think all that stuff can come into somebody's account unknown to them, and is sitting there in kind of a request folder. And like, if you had children using your social media or a profile, it could be quite damaging. Like, it's a bit scary what can be out there, and sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I suppose the social network at the end of the day is what it is, in terms of it's meant to be a place where you can, you know, engage with friends online and follow and interact with either, you know, larger celebrities or pop stars that you like. And that's what it should be. But of course, there's, like anything, there's another angle to it in terms of people trying to hack people for money, or people trying to send, you know, content they shouldn't be sending, or bots and stuff like that. So there is a whole other world, of course, to it. But the fundamental reason is social media should be a place for people to really engage with the people they want to be engaged, and following the people you want to follow. And if you don't enjoy their content, don't follow them. And the same when people follow you, make sure that you're happy to accept who you're letting into your circle as such.
I suppose it's almost treated as if it's your own house, nearly, who you're going to let in and who
Absolutely.
You're not going to let in. If you don't agree with somebody's views or their opinions, maybe to be a bit more diligent about that as well. What can be done? So if somebody discovers that account has been cloned, and also if an account has been hacked, what are the steps they should take with those social media platform providers?
Yeah, first thing is, if your account has been cloned, I wouldn't panic. You haven't been hacked. Nine times out of ten, you haven't been hacked. They've just literally copied everything off your page. So the first thing I do is put something on your page clarifying that there is a clone of you, and not to accept this page, so that people know that that is the fake page. The next thing is, I would then ask friends, family, everyone to start reporting that page immediately. Within a reasonable time, that should come down, and that should stop that. And if you don't do that, on the other side of it then is that if you didn't do that, is that would then probably give them access to start messaging all your friends, and that's when it leads into other things. So that's how I kind of react to the cloning part, is not to panic immediately, just get it up on your own page, get people starting to report them. On the other side, if you do get hacked, that's quite difficult, in terms of you need to have, obviously, be contacting Facebook, Instagram, or whatever platform for support, but you need your email account as well. You need to make sure you have access to your email, because the amount of people that get hacked or issues like that, but it's an old email and they haven't even got access to that. So that's a big problem in itself. So you need to make sure you can access your email of the account for liaison with support, etc. like that. So the first thing for a hacking though that would really avoid it is having two-factor authentication and having your email secured as well. That will really prevent a lot of hacking, and then obviously be aware of any links or what you engage with online.
So relatively simple steps, but I suppose people might just need to go in first, check that profile. If you've it set to public, take it back to private, and at least then you can control the people who are trying to follow you, and as you say, trying to get maybe access to your contacts and do something a bit more sinister on it as well, and then look at that multi-factor authentication, but even checking that you still have access to the email. And I think when you mention that, I've come across that loads of time where someone goes, I don't even know which email I used to sign into it in the first place, never mind the passwords and how I log into it. So it's about really, it's a bit like, again, it's like home security, is checking that you've got all those measures in place and that they're working for you.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's very simple steps we're talking about. Like, look, you can never be 100% secure with some of these things, but when your page goes from public to private and you put two-factor on it and you have a secure email that you have access to, then three simple steps will really help you from a starting point.
Absolutely. Well, Conor, nobody better versed as well, as you say, managing lots of influencers there too as part of Icon Management. So you know exactly what it's like to manage both private and personal and very much public accounts too. But thanks for that update this morning, Conor. I think lots of good tips for people there. Good starting point as well. And look, just keep an eye out, everybody. If your account's being cloned or hacked, you can try to do something about it. Or if you see your friends, likewise, take action. Let them know too. Conor, thanks a million for that and all the best with all your ventures.
Thanks a lot, Ronan. Loving the show.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Thanks, Conor. Talk to you again soon. It's becoming commonplace. It's becoming so common, I think we're just accepting it's part of being on social media. We don't have to put up with that, though. You know, it doesn't have to be happening. Just bear in mind, if it is happening with your account or you're seeing it happening, whether it's been cloned or whether you think it's a genuine hack, take action. I know what Conor said at the start there, that somebody could try to go in. No, they can easily, if your account is public, copy your photographs, then go to all your friends and send a new friend request. They're actually not after your information. They're trying to get into your friends and try and hack them as well. It's quite complex, quite sinister. But look, at the end of it all, it's simple, proactive steps to begin. I'm going to move on now quickly. I'm going to talk about xenotransplantation. So you, what is that when you're sitting eating your breakfast on a Saturday morning? Well, just recently in the United States, the first pig to human kidney transplant has taken place. Now, from what I can read online, and then from the newspapers there, the recipient was somebody who had previously received a human kidney, and it had failed after about 5 or 6 years, and they had gone back on dialysis, a procedure they'd been on for quite a large part of their life before the original transplant. They'd gone back on dialysis, and when the option of a pig kidney was given to them as a kind of an experiment, the recipient was quite interested in trying it out. Number one, to take themselves off dialysis, but also to try and see if it would help in terms of advancing, you know, medicine and potential solutions for this. So to look more at that whole area of kidney transplants, I'm delighted to be joined by Colin White. He's the manager of the Irish Kidney Association. Very good morning, Colin. Oop, and I put it up the right phone line. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning, Ronan.
Colin, when this news kind of came from the US, was it something that you were aware of? And, you know, is it likely a game changer, or is it very, very early stages yet?
It's very early stages yet. It's an area that has been developing for many, many years. And I had an opportunity there a couple of years ago to join a working group with the European Kidney Health Alliance looking at xenotransplantation. Giving the patient voice to it, because it's one thing to figure out whether it's possible to do it. And then the second point you've got to look at is kind of the ethics around it and any other issues and the whole area of patient choice. And this is something that's being explored in Ireland in the side of human-to-human organ donation. We have what are called extended criteria donors. So it's quite often it's an older organ donor that the kidney or whatever organ it might be in perfect condition, but it is suitable for transplant, and patients are given the choice that, like, they're given the information that, look, the donor is this background, so and so and so and so, and would you like to accept this offer? Like, if we look at organ donation and transplantation internationally, like Spain sits head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of the number of donors per million population and, as a consequence, the number of transplants. And they would very much have achieved this position because of their use of extended criteria donors. So it's good that I think science and medicine is pushing the boundaries. They're looking to address what is a very real problem. There is a shortage of organs out there. There's currently over 600 people awaiting a transplant in Ireland. And so we have xenotransplantation, we have stem cell research in the area of kidneys. We have research looking into the possibility of implanting artificial kidneys. So whilst the operation has gone ahead, and I think we have to admire the individual, like he's kind of seeing the bigger picture and kind of feeling that he's doing something for kind of the wider population, it is a long way off before becoming mainstream.
And clearly, you know, patient input was a huge factor in that too. I think that the recipient knew exactly what they were doing. That it was as much probably a medical experiment than anything. But coming back to what you mentioned about the stats in Spain, I suppose it, like a lot of other countries, would have had an opt-out system for organ donation, which something is only coming to Ireland now with the passing of the soft organ donation bill, which only passed back in February. How quickly or how likely is that to make the change in Ireland and sort of bring our numbers down?
Well, I think something we have to be aware of in Spain, that they introduced soft opt-out in all the way back in 1979. And 10 years later, they took a look at their statistics to see, well, how did that impact things? And they realized it wasn't quite the game changer that it was perceived to be. And cut a long story short, a bit more research, and they realized it's actually kind of what happens at the coal face. So when you're in the intensive care unit, when a potential organ donor is identified, so firstly, it's having the structures in place to identify potential organ donors. And then it's about the approach to family, because I think it's very important to realize that if we look at the new legislation and we call it by its full name, soft opt-out with family consent. So like the family consent piece remains. So when the legislation is commenced, like, yes, it has been passed, it's been signed into law by the president. But when it commences, what will happen is people will have the opportunity to opt out of organ donation. So if they decide, well, in the event of me being a potential organ donor, I'd rather not be considered, there will be a national register that they can sign up to. And if they do, and if they die in the circumstances suitable for organ donation, which is in an intensive care unit on a life support machine, their families will not be approached and organ donation will not be an issue.
Because so people still need to be able to go on that register as well. It doesn't automatically mean that your organs can be harvested. You still have to make your intentions clear and actually sign up that, yes, you are.
You'd be signing up to say you don't want to be an organ donor.
Yeah.
So everybody else then is presumed to be a willing potential organ donor, not a willing donor or not an absolute donor, a willing potential organ donor. Now, only about 1% of deaths every year are in the circumstances appropriate for organ donation. So we have to realize that the numbers we're dealing with are very small. And as a consequence, the importance of family consent absolutely does come to the fore. Now, if we again go back to the legislation, there's kind of a subtle change. Like the current system, potential organ donors identified, family are approached for consent to organ donation. If they give it, organ donation happens. If they don't, it doesn't. Under the new legislation, the family will be approached in a slightly different fashion. It will be, do you have any reason why your loved one would not want to have been an organ donor? So it's kind of assent rather than consent, I think, if you look at it that way. But the family's role is still there. And this is why the Irish Kidney Association is still very focused on its campaign messaging, like don't leave your loved ones in doubt, which is encouraging people to have the organ donation conversation. When everything is good, when you're in good health, like this is why we have Organ Donor Awareness Week every year. It'll be taking place at the end of next month, 20th to the 27th of April. And the organ donor card, which has been around for 45 years now, the purpose of it is really to be an icebreaker for the organ donation conversation, that it has a space on the back of it for your next of kin to sign. And in asking your next of kin to sign, it's a way of initiating that conversation, because it's not a typical kind of dinner time conversation, as you said, that, oh, by the way, in the event I die in appropriate circumstances, I'd like to be an organ donor. But if, for example, your listeners were to go to ika.ie and request an organ donor card, they get the card and then bring it to family to sign, it initiates the conversation. It makes it that little bit easier for people to have the discussion.
Absolutely, yeah, it takes action. I suppose it's so important to highlight that as well, that just the change in the law doesn't automatically mean such a thing is going to happen. I think it's good for people to be aware of that too. And looking for yourselves in the Irish Kidney Association, to continue the great work you're doing. But Colin, thank you so much for coming on this morning as well. I think we can safely say it's going to be quite a while before we possibly see a pig to human kidney transplant in Ireland. But always interesting to know kind of what scientists and doctors are looking at for the bigger picture as well. But thank you so much for that this morning, and talk to you again soon. That's Colin White there, the manager of the Irish Kidney Association. Time for a quick break. After that, going to get to some of your texts. We've had some really, really interesting suggestions as to who our next Taoiseach should be, and lots of you texting in as well to tell about instances of hacking and cloning on your social media accounts.
Saturday View on Midlands 183, with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
Yeah, loads of you have responded to that issue about phones being hacked. Some people are saying it's a regular one, phones crashing, go to buy a new one, transferring stuff over, and then you can't remember passwords and how to get back into things, possibly leading yourself open there to being hacked as well. You know, again, people talking about also highlighting the scams that are coming through. You know, I often get texts with, you know, hi ma'am, I'm stuck somewhere, like, and kind of going, well, I ain't your mother, that's for sure. No matter what way you view the world at the minute, I'm not your mother. I sometimes text back a couple of expletives there, doesn't deter anybody. But it has got to that point almost, if we see a text or a call from an unknown number, we're a little bit unsure about reading it out and about actually addressing it on as well. And say loads of people texting in, you know, who've been experienced, who have been victims of hacking, or who also have seen people they know who've been hacked. And what's really irking people out there this morning is the people who've been hacked not taking any action and not looking to close down accounts. And as Conor Cochrane pointed out, you may have been sending messages or private messages to people through that account, and you've basically walked away. It's like basically opening your house and opening up all your bills and your letters from people and just saying, look at here, this is open, this is public access, come in and have a read of it. And if you had letters from a close friend or a family member, and you're basically allowing public access to that. So Connor's advice was, go and set your accounts onto the public setting. Now, when it comes back to that big question, you know, as Adrian Kavanagh pointed out earlier, it's always the doll that elects the Taoiseach, and actually very few Taoiseach actually are put into the office, you know, on the back of a mandate that they put to the people. And most are brought in at some point in their office. I mean, that happened with Brian Cowan. We're going to see the similar, what's pretty much guaranteed to happen with Simon Harris too. So I asked you, who would you make Taoiseach if we were given that one chance? And Mark and Leash pointed out Carl Nolan at the start of the show would be a good one. Other people have suggested, and it never takes too long until this one comes in, Michael O'Leary. Somebody suggested Michael O'Leary, as he seems to be the only prominent person who will deal with our civil and public service. Accountability is devoid, and until that is resolved, any party or its leader is just somewhat academic. That came in there from John in Tullamore. Thank you for that, John, as well. Yeah, Michael always gets thrown in the mix as well. Would he take it, I suppose? That's the question. I have one text there, WhatsApp in here. It says, Ronan Berry for Taoiseach. Now, I think I know who that is. Nigel, I think your phone has after been hacked there as well. You better check into that and check out your security arrangements on it. Matty McGrath, another name that has featured for quite a few of you. Matty McGrath is leader of the government. He is honest, straight and feels for the people. He doesn't make promises he can't keep, not like the others who promise everything but do nothing. That came in there from John too. John doesn't say where he is, but Excuse me, thanks for your text as well. Somebody else says, I'm sure Harris, as in Simon, will be okay, only because he's the likes of Berry in Kildare and all other independents propping them up for all their favours as well. That's really interesting. That's Cathal Berry, of course. No relation of my own, but Cathal is a TD in South Kildare as well. So thank you for all your suggestions there too. A few others maybe that I probably can't read out live on air. But anyway, time for me to vacate this seat and a bit like Leo, leave the big seat for somebody younger and better. Lorraine McCormack will be here after the news at 11 with Feel Good Saturday. I'll talk to you all next week. Have a great weekend.
Saturday View, with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumcluneEnergy.com. Midlands 103.